stacker.
Level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Reader at the hash mark, spins off the boards, put it back toward the line for Ekman Larson. He's chopped off the puck. It's a breakaway now here for Little from center ice. In. Little moves in, shoots, score! Ryan Little will throw the monkey off his back and make it 3-0.
Brian Little scoring third goal last night for the Winnipeg Jets. His second of the season, his first in exactly one calendar month. The Jets head out and win 4-1 last night, defeating the Arizona Coyotes by that same score for a second straight game. 10 p.m. on a Wednesday night, what better way to spend it than with us at the Illegal Curve Hockey Show? We welcome you to NHL This Week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
By the way, Sean Drew looks like he just got up from his dad nap.
You know, I left the house a little bit earlier than I typically would to get here in time, because if I had sat on the couch for any longer, I was definitely going to fall asleep.
It's okay, this Drew. I took a nap during that Coyotes Jets game
last night. I mean, obviously we'll get started with the Jets and the Coyotes game last night. The Jets defeating the Coyotes 4-1, the same score that they defeated them on Saturday night by a 4-1 margin. And oh my God, the Arizona Coyotes are the worst hockey team I have seen in a long, long time. They make the Colorado Avalanche of last year look like a good hockey team.
This might be the worst NHL team in the last couple of decades, I think.
I tweeted this out on Saturday night, and then I reiterated the tweet last night. How did the Coyotes won two games? I mean, I think it's a legitimate question.
They haven't won in regulation.
They have not won in regulation. They have not yet won within the first 60 minutes of play. But I honestly do not know how they've won two games, because I watch them and they're devoid of talent. They're devoid of most what you would call hockey sense. They're just one of the worst hockey teams I have seen in years and decades, like you just said, Ezzy. So it's a damn good thing that the Jets took care of business on Saturday night and last night by beating them 4-1. Because basically, if you lose to the Coyotes, you should be just shot out to the moon and hang your head in embarrassment, because that's the worst team I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, Drew, you just said it. It's a horrible hockey team. And as Sean mentioned, this team somehow in 20 games does not have a regulation win. And the good news for the Jets is they beat the Coyotes twice back to back. But the bad news is we have to watch the Coyotes again at Bell MTS Place in early February.
Hang on, are they going to have a regulation win by then?
I hope so. But right now this team is on pace for, what, 29 points? And you mentioned the Colorado Avalanche. We saw them come in here last year. They were absolutely horrible. They couldn't get the puck out of their own zone. They weren't good offensively. They weren't good defensively. They didn't get the goaltending. And the worst part is I was in that Coyotes dressing room after the game getting audio for the post-game show. And
I mean, I thought you were getting a tryout to see if you could play on defense for them.
Yeah, he got a PTO.
Yeah.
This is a group of players, Drew, that almost seems like they've accepted losing.
Well, when you haven't won a game all season long in regulation, it makes sense, especially when you're a young team, as young as the Coyotes are. I mean, it's the only thing they now know in the NHL.
You know what the craziest thing is? The Tucson Roadrunners, their affiliate, is actually the best team in the AHL right now.
No kidding, really?
Yes.
Well, maybe they should just see if they can switch organizations or something, because, the Coyotes are bad.
You know, they have top players like Dylan Strome and Nick Merkley. Lawson Krause is on the Tucson Roadrunners. The Moose, I don't believe, have played Tucson yet this year. By the way, nice victory for the Moose right before we came on, 3-2 over the Chicago Wolves. But, you know, it's not like the Arizona Coyotes have a lack of talent. Obviously, Jacob Chychrun's injury hurt them a little bit, but come on, guys, a second-year defenseman, you're not going to pin all of your hopes on him. He's a depth defenseman for you. He's a third-pairing guy, even though he did play a top-four role for them last year. But when you're talking about Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Alex Goligoski, Jason Demers, this is just a terrible group of defensemen, as far as I'm concerned. And when you talk about the scoring depth, I mean, I don't know how Zach Rinaldo's still in the NHL. With all due respect to Zach Rinaldo.
He scored
on Saturday night. He had the opening goal on Saturday night. But you're absolutely right. And you know what the irony, I don't know if it's irony, but so the Jets in that game last night, the Jets did everything in their power in the first period to hand the Coyotes at least some momentum and some energy. They take those three consecutive first period penalties. Jets can't get into any sort of rhythm in that first period last night, as Tyler Myers takes a penalty just before the 7-minute mark, and then Byfuglien takes a penalty about 4 minutes later, and then 4 minutes after that, Jacob Trouba takes another penalty. So you hand over three power play opportunities to the Coyotes, and they can't capitalize on any of the three.
Not only could they not capitalize, did you guys get any feeling in that first period that the Coyotes were actually going to score on the power play?
There was like a couple plays where Clayton Keller had the puck, and I was like, all right, well, let's see what this youngster can do. Maybe he'll like slip one in, but they just try to force some plays cross seam, and the Jets just picked it off too easily, and just like not a very intimidating looking team when you break it down. And but you know what? With all things considered, you say this. The PK and Connor Hellebuck kept the Jets alive in the first period.
Oh, absolutely. And Connor Hellebuck was the difference in that game, because I really didn't think the Jets played particularly well in the course of the game. Sure, they had a good second period. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, and then by the time the third period started, the game was out of reach anyway. So, you know, I guess the Jets get a bit of a pass for that, but you score, you know, Andrew Kopp opens the scoring in the first period, and it's a very good individual effort by Kopp, but I mean, they let him just come out from the corner, take a shot, get the rebound. They didn't get anywhere near him. They didn't do anything to knock him off stride or, you know, prevent him from standing by the net. And he gets the Jets on the board to give that 1-0 lead. But, oh my God, have some professional pride. They had nothing. They just let him walk out. And I mean, all due respect to Andrew Kopp, he's not what I would describe as a natural goal scorer. That was just a guy who wanted it more than his opponents.
And, you know, even though the Jets didn't play their A game, guys, you have to give them credit for being opportunistic. And you have to like the fact that Brian Little breaks his goal scoring drought. You have to like the fact that you got multiple goals from your bottom six, because the Scheifele-Wheeler-Connor line was not very good last night.
No.
It was really the Little line that was driving the bus offensively. So it's nice to see Adam Lowry pick up a couple of points, and it's nice to see Joel Armia pick up a goal. It was a beautiful shot. But it almost seemed like, you know,
Hang on a second. I got to stop you right there. It was nice that Joel Armia got a goal because, you know, that's his third of the year. But that wasn't what I would describe as a beautiful shot.
I think everyone was watching Nick Ehlers trying to one blade skate off the ice.
Yeah. Shades of Nick Ehlers on that
including
goal.
Including the broadcasters.
Well, yeah, that's what, because Dennis and Nick Boynton, who were doing the game on TSN3, both missed the goal because you have a one-on-one situation with Joel Armia coming against the defenseman. He takes, you know, maybe half a stride over the blue line and flips a casual wrist shot over the shoulder of Antti Raanta. I mean, I don't know that it was a beautiful goal by any stretch of the imagination. It was more of a, oh my God, how did that goal go in? You know,
it was almost like, oh, well, Arizona's going to lose this game now. Like, you can't rebound after that if you're the Coyotes. You're as mentally fragile as you are, and then Antti Raanta lets that in. That's the backbreaker.
Well, the game was over at that point in time, without a doubt. And then Brian Little, as you mentioned, as gets that breakaway unassisted goal, you know, coming in on his own. I think he was on his own from the Jets hash marks.
He pokes Ekman-Larsson, and he's all by himself. I will say this. Josh Morrissey got away with one. He got away with an elbow.
Yeah, fine. He did. Definitely got away.
Max Domi.
Yeah, definitely got away with one.
Let's just say this. The concussion spotter is a myth. That doesn't exist.
Well, because you're thinking that Domi should have been sent to the quiet room a little bit?
Absolutely.
He definitely looked shaken up.
He was sitting on the bench with his hands over his head, and he was out of it. He didn't know where he was. He didn't know what was going on. If you want to put out the image that you actually care about brain trauma and headshots, you bring the guy off the ice. At least portray an image, you know, a facade that you are trying.
Mm-hmm.
Not even, nothing.
Not even, yeah. He didn't even make him go into the tent.
He's out there on the power play.
Like Russell Wilson went into the tent on Thursday night in Arizona
before
for all of about half a second.
Yeah,
you know, he's in and out of the tent.
Guys, I realize it's been 24 hours since last night's game, but I still can't believe how bad the Coyotes are. And I don't mean to, you know, kick the Coyotes while they're down, but they have still not won a regulation game 20 games into the season.
You want to reiterate that,
do you? I can't wrap my head around that, how they're that bad.
You know, you're not wrong, Ezzy, and I mean, it is cruel and unusual punishment to have to watch the Coyotes in back-to-back hockey games. I mean, you thought the game on Saturday night was bad, and it was. I mean, let's not get carried away again. The Jets won, but if it wasn't for Matt Hendrick's goal where, I mean, he sort of deflects off a couple sticks on Saturday night, and he gets lucky.
Well, and Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler stepped up in the third.
In the third period, yep. Right. But if it's 1-0 Arizona going into the third period, when the Jets have shown really no life in that game, you know, who knows how it unfolds. But, you know, Matt Hendrick's, and that's what happens when you're a bad team is, you know, the breaks don't go your way. Matt Hendrick's gets what I'll describe as a weak goal, because it was. I mean, good for him, but, you know, it was ultimately a weak goal. And then the Jets, you know, just take over in the third period. And it's similar on last night's game. Andrew Kopp, you know, the Coyotes were the better of the teams in the first period, largely because they had the power plays. They can't do anything with them. Andrew Kopp gets his goal. Then Joel Armia gets that goal early in the second period.
And right before the Armia goal, Connor Hellebuck comes up with a huge save on Derek Stepan. And
right.
Kind of, I don't want to say turn the tide, but it's set up for a swing of momentum, we'll say, and Armia goal, and then it all just came crashing down on our poor desert dogs.
Sean, the Coyotes have a minus 33 goal differential. The closest team to the Coyotes has a minus 21 goal differential. That's the Sabres. Minus 33 after 20 games.
They're not very good. They're not very good. I don't really think you can take a ton out of the Jets' victories. I mean, the Jets did what they needed to do. They got the four points were available. I don't know that their play, if it was against any other team, would have resulted in a victory. But you play the opponents that you have to play, and that was the Coyotes on Saturday and last night, so they get the full marks for the win.
Drew, honest question, do the Coyotes get to 10 wins this year?
Oh, no.
It's hard to believe that they're going to at this point in time, I don't know what you're serving by keeping your young guys in the AHL. I mean, you might as well.
And I would assume that Dylan Strome gets a call up pretty soon.
I would assume you just have to. I mean,
he's tearing up the A.
You have to bring him up. I mean, what are you keeping, you know, the guys? Why are you keeping Zach Rinaldo around? Why are you keeping Brad Richardson around? I mean, these guys.
Well, this season's already over.
Was Anthony Duclair a scratch?
He was a scratch.
He was scratched. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Nick Cousins was in for Duclair.
Yeah. There you go. He threw a roundhouse kick at Connor Hellebuck, Nick Cousins.
Yeah, he's sort of flopping to the
kicked
ice.
Kicked off Kulikov's thighs with your skate blade. Was it Happy Gilmore school? Hockey.
And Sean, the Jets played well enough to win. I mean, you had some nice individual performances last night, as you mentioned. I mean, Connor Hellebuck was the first star of that game. Adam Lowry, second star of that game. He had a fantastic game. But for me, it was just watching a team that just completely looked out of sorts.
My question is, and we'll go before we go to break, is when are the Coyotes going to get that first regulation win?
Ooh.
They're into Montreal tomorrow night. I know the Habs have been struggling, but they've been playing better hockey as of late. Saturday, they're into Ottawa. Monday, they're at the Leafs. Then they're home for three against the Sharks, the Kings, and the Golden Knights.
Well, they're not winning any of those.
And then they're at Edmonton and at Calgary. I mean, and you know what the thing is about, you know, when you're this bad of a team, the other teams actually get up to play against you because they don't want to be. You don't want to be the team that the Cleveland Browns defeat.
2-15-3.
I mean, you don't want to be the team the Cleveland Browns defeat. So all due respect to the Arizona Coyotes, I know we're piling on them, but we're only piling on you guys because you're that bad.
We just watched you two games in a row.
Yeah,
2-15-3.
At least the Jets will have some more competition tomorrow night when the Philadelphia Flyers come to town. We'll talk about the Jets and the Flyers up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to a late night edition of NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. One final note on the Arizona Coyotes.
They're really bad.
Yeah, they're really bad. Our enterprising producer, Chris Curry, passed over this note. Statistically, Arizona would be the worst team in the NHL since the 1992-93 Ottawa Senators and San Jose Sharks. And if you recall, both of those two teams were expansion teams in 92-93. The Coyotes are on pace to be the eighth worst team of all time in the NHL, and they believe the other seven teams were all felled by a deadly strain of the flu halfway through the year and had to default all their games.
That's also before there was the shootout and the extra point.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's hard to be this bad. It really takes skill to be this bad.
2-15-3.
Yes. Just horrendous. Let's get to the game tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place as the Philadelphia Flyers come to town, their sole visit to the building, of course, each and every year. Flyers 8-8-2. At least they've won more than two games to start this year, although they are currently in the bottom of the Metropolitan Division, but it's a very tightly bundled Metropolitan Division. The Philadelphia Flyers 18th in the NHL in goals for, tied 6th in the NHL in goals against. So they don't score a ton, but they also don't give up a ton. They've been shut out, if I'm not mistaken, 5 times in their first 18 games, and they are really the definition of a one-line team, as this Philadelphia Flyers team that comes to town tomorrow is certainly led by that Jakub Voracek, Claude Giroux, and Sean Couturier line. After that, there's a steep drop-off when it comes to their offensive output.
Yeah, and they've been shut out back-to-back against the Minnesota Wild, and it's unfortunate, guys, because prior to that, they lost a tough game last Saturday in the shootout. I should say 2 Saturdays ago in the shootout to Colorado, but before that, they picked up a big shutout victory over St. Louis, and then they defeated the Chicago Blackhawks as well, who were struggling at the time. And before that, Philly had been shut out by Chicago. So it looked like Philly was starting to turn it around, Drew, but I think you nailed it. This has been the problem for the Coyotes really dating back to last year.
Flyers.
Pardon me. I can't get the Coyotes out of my mind. Pardon me, the Flyers.
They're like a virus that infected your brain when you watched them.
God, is that a bad hockey team. The Flyers are having trouble scoring goals, and as you mentioned, you know, Sean Couturier is actually centering that top line.
Yes, Claude Giroux on the wing, of course, the big move that was made during training camp for the Flyers.
Yeah, and when Nolan Patrick comes back to the lineup, and we'll ask Anthony Sanfilippo about that, it might be tomorrow, it's definitely going to be in the next week or so, but when you're talking about Nolan Patrick returning, you know, then you might see, I think, Claude Giroux go back to centering, but right now, Sean Couturier is playing really well, and right now, as far as I'm concerned, they're a top-heavy team, and you look at Philadelphia, and you know, you expected more out of guys like Valtteri Filppula. You expected more out of Travis Konecny, who's in his second year, and these guys have struggled, even though, you know, Filppula's got 6 goals on the year. He struggled as of late, and you know, this team is still good defensively, and I actually really like, you know, how Brian Elliott and Michael Neuwirth have played in net, and I really like Shane Gostisbehere. He's picked up where he left off towards the end of last year, but you know, this Flyers team, to me, Sean, is kind of a fringe playoff team, and you know, you've kind of seen that over the last few years. You know, you take one step forward, one step back. They're not able to put together extended winning streaks. Mm-hmm. And early on this season, we're kind of seeing that. You know, you pick up a couple wins, you lose a couple. There hasn't been very many extending winning streaks this year.
Yeah, I was looking at that too, just looking at some of the wins and losses and if they were able to build any traction as the season rolls along. And yeah, not really, kind of reminiscent of some of the situations that used to ail the Jets where they just couldn't, you know, pick up 3 consecutive wins. It would be one step or 2 steps forward, 1 back. And it's just, it's really hard to gain anywhere, especially in a, you know, it is a tight metro, but it's a very competitive metro division. So yeah, a lot of similarities, but I think that when we were looking at just the depth down the middle, and we were talking about this as we entered the segment, I think the Philadelphia Flyers are really missing the depth of a Braden Schenn. You know, he went to St. Louis in the offseason, and he's just, you know, you move Claude Giroux to the wing, you lose Nolan Patrick down the middle, and then, you move Sean Couturier to the top wing, so you're combining 2 of your centermen essentially on one wing, you lose another one, and I think just their depth down the middle, it's really starting to show.
Well, they just don't have enough offensive firepower, because to your point, Sean, if they went down the middle, if they went Giroux, Couturier, Nolan Patrick down the middle.
That's a really good 1-2-3.
That's a way better 1-2-3. But then you look at your wingers, and with the exception of Jakub Voracek and Wayne Simmonds, you have a bunch of wingers, none of whom have really produced at an NHL level. I mean, Jori Lehterä is certainly... he's a third line player. I mean, there's a reason why the St. Louis Blues considered him expendable. And sure, the Flyers were able to pick up Lehterä, and they got a first round pick from St. Louis in that trade. But I agree with you, Sean. I think they do miss a guy like Braden Schenn, because he at least was, you know, he was a top six player. You just look down there, and Dale Weiss has been really a bust since coming over from the Montreal Canadiens as a free agent a couple years ago.
Yeah, but when you're talking about Dale Weiss, I mean, Dale Weiss, Drew, with all due respect to Dale Weiss, I mean, I really like his game, but you're not expecting 20 goals from Dale Weiss. You mentioned Jori Lehterä. He's been awful. Yeah. He hasn't scored a goal yet this year.
Well, I mean,
And that's why, you know, the loss of Braden Schenn hurts, especially when you have Nolan Patrick out of the lineup for three weeks, right? So I think really that has been the name of the game, and especially when you're not able to convert power play opportunities. And not only are you not getting secondary scoring, they're not getting scoring in their last couple of games from their big boys.
From anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Devin Dubnyk's an excellent goaltender. But, you know, for me, nothing has really changed from last year. Because we know, for the most part, I mean, Wayne Simmonds had a decent year last year. Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek, their numbers were down last year. And also the goaltending wasn't good enough. And actually, you know, Brian Elliott, even though he's played the lion's share of games,
Michael Neuvirth's got better numbers.
Been better. Oh, so, yeah. And, you know, the goaltending and the defense, as we talked about, they've allowed the seventh fewest goals in the NHL. So that's not really the problem. Right now, it's putting the puck in the net.
Oh, especially when all the opponents, especially, when you're on the road, when the Flyers are on the road, opponents get the last change. And they can just say, okay, we're going to match up against your top line. We're going to try and prevent your top line from doing anything because we don't think that any of your other forwards are going to be able to beat us.
And it's interesting you bring up the line matchings, Drew. Are we going to see a Shifley-Couturier head-to-head tomorrow, you think? Or you think that maybe Adam Lowry will get the assignment of the top line?
I think...
So much was made, you know, the Couturier-Shifley, that hoopla.
I mean, look, Couturier is actually having his best statistical season so far. He's over a point a game for a guy that a lot of people just sort of pegged as a...
like a third-line checking center.
Right, as a guy who they didn't think had the offensive upside of, you know, especially when you look at Mark Scheifele, picked right before him.
It doesn't hurt to be playing with Giroux and Voracek.
Yeah, of course it doesn't, and that's certainly a part of it.
But I'm not taking anything away from Couturier, but... Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you guys this, from the Jets' perspective. Connor Hellebuyck gave up only the one goal last night. Do you give him the start, or you go with Mason in the revenge factor against his old team?
Yeah, it's a good question. You kind of think that they should go with Steve Mason against his old team, but Connor Hellebuyck played so well, you could make a strong argument that they should go back to Hellebuyck. If I was the coach, I would put Hellebuyck in net, and then I'd play Mason against the Devils maybe, because you don't want him out of the lineup for too long. I shouldn't say out of the lineup. I mean not starting for that long, but...
Also, the Jets didn't skate today. It was a mandatory day off. So if Steve Mason were to play, he'd be going in on very limited practice, touches, however you want to phrase it.
Well, he played Saturday against the Coyotes. So it's not like, I mean, I know it's been 5 days and everything else. And I know
the Coyotes,
they didn't really give much of a challenge. I suspect it's going to be Steve Mason.
Really?
I have a feeling it might be Mason. The Jets kind of like doing that, you know.
I think players sort of, you know, circle certain games on their calendars, and one of those games that you circle on a calendar is against, you know, a former team. And, you know, had Steve Mason not played well on Saturday, then maybe there's some pause. But right now, not that the Jets can afford a loss, because they certainly can't, but they're playing well. I think you throw Steve Mason a bone, you try and get him to feel even better about himself, and you hope that he's able to do that against his former team and really sort of he becomes a member of the Winnipeg Jets that first time he plays against the Philadelphia Flyers and can defeat the Philadelphia Flyers, or can, you know, go up against his former team. So I suspect it's going to be Mason, and then it'll be Hellebuyck, I guess, on Saturday, and then it gets a little busy next week.
Yep.
Next week is Monday. What is it? Monday
Nashville.
Monday in Nashville. Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So you got 3 and 4 nights next week. Wednesday against the Kings. No midweek show next Wednesday because of that. Friday afternoon, that game in Anaheim. It's a 3 o'clock puck drop because it's Black Friday in the States. Mm-hmm. And then you got that Saturday night game in San Jose. So I suspect you get Steve Mason tomorrow and then a Hellebuck on Saturday. And then we'll see how it plays out the rest of the week.
You could be right about Mason starting tomorrow, but if it isn't his old team, are we even talking about Mason starting?
Probably not.
No.
If it's New Jersey tomorrow and then the Flyers on Saturday.
Or just any team over the next couple of games.
You're probably right. It's probably Hellebuck just because Hellebuck has been that good. But again, I think they want to get Mason even more comfortable. I think they want to give him more reps. And
that's why I think you could be right.
And he's played well his last two games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the beginning of the season was an unmitigated disaster, and he would say as such.
You're talking about when he came in against Montreal.
I wasn't even talking about that. I was talking about the game against Columbus.
Mason came in against Montreal, right?
No, nobody came in against Montreal.
No, Vegas.
Vegas.
Mason came in against Vegas.
Mason played well in Columbus.
I'm getting my games confused.
Mason played well against Columbus a few weeks back, remember? Then he played that third period in Vegas. Then he played the Saturday night in Arizona. So,
right.
You know, it's now he's given what? One goal or two goals in his last seven periods, something like that. So I think, you know, the numbers are improving, and I think he wants to get the start tomorrow night against his former team, the Flyers.
Yep, you could be right.
When we come back.
You could be wrong, though.
I could be right. I could be wrong. We'll find out tomorrow. When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. He joins us. He's an old, old good friend of the program. Great to have Anthony back on. That's up next on NHL This Week, live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour is come and gone. You're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's burning the midnight oil with us. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. He's a very good friend of the program. We're pleased to welcome back Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us at this late hour.
Oh, no problem, guys. Anything for you. I mean, you guys are on morning, noon, night, overnight. I'm available to you.
We always appreciate it, buddy. It's always good to talk to you again and talk to you, of course, about the Philadelphia Flyers, a team you've covered for many a year now, doing so with CrossingBroad.com. And, Anthony, we were sort of looking at the Flyers and, you know, the 8-8-2 record thus far. You know, so, you know, 8 wins out of a possible 18, I guess, isn't bad. But when you look at it in the context of the Metropolitan Division, they're down at the bottom there with the Carolina Hurricanes, the 2 games in hand the Hurricanes have on the Flyers. Is that sort of the big difficulty right now, is that the Flyers' record is okay, but there's still so many teams ahead of them in the standings that it's going to be difficult to jump up?
Yeah, it is part of the problem. Actually, yeah, it's interesting you mentioned this. I actually wrote about this today. You know, if you look around the league, since they've switched to 4 divisions, and then even if you want to go back as far as when the shootout came into play and the infamous loser point got added to the mix prior to the 2005-06 season. Teams in last place in their division on this date, and it's an early date, it's only 20% of the season, November 15th, they don't really make the playoffs. Only 17% of the time has a last place team on November 15th advanced to make the playoffs. So it's a real conundrum. It's so much harder in the NHL just in general to come back from a slow start in the season because you have to climb over so many teams and teams are getting points even when they lose games than it is to jump out to a quick start and maybe have your struggles later in the year. So the Flyers learned this before. I mean, they went through this before and, you know, they fought their way back and made a playoff run a couple years ago even though they got bounced in the first round by the Rangers. So you think they would know a little better, and this isn't a horrible start, like you said, 8-8-2. I mean, it's just, you know, it's 500 points wise. But this team should be playing better. I mean, when you really look at it, they can't score right now. They averaged 3.7 goals a game in the first month of the season, and here they are in November averaging 1.5 goals per game, and that's really the crux of the problem right now. And I'm getting a little concerned that it's not just the fact that, oh, you know, you had some guys hurt or guys are playing through injuries. I think that the system's kind of stale here. Yeah, it's 2.5 years now, or almost 2.5 years, of Dave Haxtell as coach, and I think we're not seeing a lot of creativity from the bench as far as trying to find new ways to jumpstart this team's offense, and they have the same problems that they seem to have every year.
Anthony, what would you say the chances are that we see Winnipegger Nolan Patrick in the lineup tomorrow against the Jets, and how bad does this team need his offense?
Well, that's a great question. I'm not there, unfortunately, in Winnipeg as much as I'd love to be up in Winnipeg, hanging out with you guys right now. I'm back here. I know Nolan went on the trip and was practicing with the Flyers, and has been for the last few days. Just knowing the Flyers like I do, I don't think they would take a 19-year-old rookie on a road trip to his hometown if they didn't plan on playing him when he hadn't been traveling with the team prior. So I really do believe he gets back into the lineup. Could they use an infusion of some kind of offense? Yes. Their secondary scoring is terrible. They've only had 2 goals by forwards this month that are not on the top line. So you take out Giroux, Couturier, and Voracek, they've only had 2 goals from forwards other than that. That's pretty bad. So Nolan Patrick will help in that vein. However, I will say this. Prior to his injury, when he went out with a concussion in, I think it was October 21st, he really was not looking great in his last few games prior to getting the injury. And I'm a little skeptical that he's missed this much time with this quote unquote concussion or upper body injury. I think it was a convenient time for the Flyers to say, okay, let's get him healthy, but then let's let him practice with the team and spend some time working on the things that he needs, because he's been skating for a while now. Work on some of the things that he needs to work on, so that when he does eventually get back into the lineup, he'll be a better player. And I think that, you know, we all know what his skill level is. You guys have watched him, you know, since the time he was in junior and even younger than that. So you kind of know his history and the kind of talent that he has. I think that it was missing in the first 9 games of the season that he played. I think that the Flyers are hoping now, after this break and getting him up to speed a little bit, that maybe it will start to show itself, and maybe as soon as tomorrow night in Winnipeg.
Anthony, I'm curious what you've noticed from Claude Giroux this year. He's, you know, a lot was made of him being moved to the wing with Sean Couturier down the middle, Jakub Voracek on his opposite wing. How does Claude Giroux, the winger, differ from Claude Giroux, the centerman?
It less he has to do to get back and play defense. That line, you know, Giroux and Voracek have been together for a few years now. And a few years ago, they were pretty darn good. And then last year, they both had a down year. Excuse me. And I think that Giroux, you know, as he's gotten older, he had the surgery prior to last season, a hip surgery that doesn't like to blame for his numbers being down. But, geez, it's not easy to come back from that and skate at the level you used to skate at. And he's turning 30 this year, so this is a guy that, you know, he's starting to – reach that age where you can't skate as well as the 21 and 22-year-olds that are in the league. So you put him on the wing, and I think that he's still got great vision and great offensive ability and a nice shot, and he's a great playmaker, and you make him skate less. I think it's a health maintenance kind of thing, and it really works. I think that he's not up to the level where he was, you know, when he was a Hart Trophy finalist. And I don't think he's going to be a 90-point player ever again. But I think Claude Giroux can be a, you know, 60 to 70-point player without a problem playing on the wing. I think the bigger find for the Flyers has been Couturier has an offensive game. And when you look at the numbers that he's putting up so far this season, he's a guy who, you know, for years we've been hearing how he's the next version of Patrice Bergeron. He's the next version of Anze Kopitar. You know, these kind of guys who can put up a lot of points and play great defense and be a sulky trophy candidate every year. But Couturier never had that offense. And maybe it was because he wasn't playing with, you know, elite offensive players like he is now with Giroux and Voracek. And you're starting to see, here's a guy that's got 20 points. And he has 10 goals already. He didn't score his 10th goal last year till March. So it goes to show you, just if you play with good players, the kind of talent that he is. I think Giroux has helped Couturier be a better player, and I think so. That's another positive that when you look at Giroux, where as a winger, the impact that he's having is he's made Sean Couturier a better player.
Anthony Sanfilippo is our guest on NHL This Week. Anthony covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, you talked about the Flyers and their offensive struggles. Boy, wouldn't this team look very nice to have a guy like Braden Schenn in their lineup. And then secondary to that, why has Jori Lehterä, the guy that the Flyers acquired in exchange for Braden Schenn, along with a first-round pick, mind you, why has Jori Lehterä struggled so much on the offensive side of the game to start this season?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that they took on Lehterä's salary just as a, you know, way to get that first-round pick from St. Louis. I think that was more of it. They traded up to get that pick, to get, you know, to draft Morgan Frost, who they took in the late first round. But I think that the deal was that St. Louis says, all right, we'll give you the pick for Schenn, but you got to take this bad contract that we don't want anymore, which is Jori Lehterä. And Lehterä didn't start the first four or five games of the season, I think it was, and then it's finally gotten into the lineup. But boy, Jori Lehterä, I watch him play. He is slow, and I hate to say that because, you know, the response is always, hey, Anthony, you get out on the ice and skate and see who's faster. Yeah, I get it. I understand. He's in the NHL, so he has a certain level of speed, right? But in comparison to the other players he's playing with, he's just really slow. And it's not just his skating. His passing and puck decisions seem to be slower than everyone else. Yeah, he's a big body. He's strong. So when he's on the boards, he's probably, you know, he offers you a little bit of, you know, protecting the puck and puck possession, you know, time of possession that teams really covet these days. But he's not creating. And I think that was part of the issue when he was in St. Louis, was that he was expected to be like this real offensive-minded player because he had that great first season with them and then kind of, tailed off afterwards. I think that it was more that he, you know, teams, the league had to adjust to him. And once they did, there's no second level to his game. He is what he is. So if you're willing to accept Jori Lehterä as a fourth line center or a fourth line winger, then I guess it's fine. But I'll tell you what, if Nolan Patrick's back in the lineup tomorrow, I'm betting Jori Lehterä is the guy that comes out of the lineup.
Now, Anthony, we talked about one former Brandon Wheat King earlier, that of course being Nolan Patrick. Ivan Provorov is obviously the other former Brandon Wheat King. Has he just picked up from where he left off last year, and is this still amazing you that a 20-year-old defenseman is still turning out to be night in, night out a top performing defenseman for this team?
Yeah, I have no problem at saying this with confidence. I think he is a future Norris Trophy winning defenseman. I know you don't discuss 20-year-old defensemen in that vein, but he really is. I mean, he's a guy that impresses me more and more each night that I watch him, and it's amazing because, you know, the first goal that they gave up against Minnesota last night, 12 seconds in, was when Provorov lost the puck and then allowed the Wild to get that 1-0 lead. But then you take that and say, okay, well, that's a bad play. But then watch him play another 22, 23 minutes. He's the best defenseman on the ice for either team. And it's amazing to watch him play. He's got great skating ability. He's really smart. His stick is always in the lane, always in the way. If there's a negative to his game, it's that he's not shooting as much as he could. And we saw that as a rookie. He actually had some really good offensive ability. He's got a heavy shot from the point. He makes smart passes. He's usually in the right position, joining the play offensively. I think, if anything, because of the responsibility that he's being asked to carry for this team from a defensive perspective, that he's not doing as much as he can offensively. I think as some of the other younger defensemen that they have in the system and in the organization, Travis Sanheim's obviously already on the roster, but when you talk about, and then Robert Haig is already on the roster, starting to look good, and maybe Samuel Moran gets a chance later this year. Well, as these guys start to come into their own and become better defensive players, I think Provorov will then become more offensive minded. But he is really impressive. And I don't usually say that. I'm harder on rookies. I'm kind of the old school hockey guy. I mean, I came up as a writer under Ken Hitchcock, right? And Ken Hitchcock hated the rookies, and so I kind of learned from him. that, you know, rookies, that they take time to develop and become the kinds of players that you want to see. I don't have that with Provorov. Provorov, even though he's in his second year now, he really impresses me to the point that I think that, you know, we're only 2 or 3 years away from him being considered one of the elite defensemen in the entire NHL.
Anthony Sikkin on the blue line, you mentioned his name just a little minutes ago. You know, I'll be blunt with this question. Forgive the ignorance. Who's Robert Haig?
You know, Robert Haig's an interesting player. He was a draft pick by the Flyers the same year that Samuel Morin was drafted, which I think was 2013. Mm-hmm. He was a second-round pick by the Flyers that year. And a lot of people thought that Haig was maybe like a late first-rounder from Sweden who slipped down into that second round. And the Flyers drafted him because he had some pro experience playing over in Sweden. And he spent the last 2 years in the AHL with the Phantoms, Lehigh Valley Phantoms, Flyers affiliate. And, you know, I was talking to the Lehigh Valley Phantoms former assistant coach, Riley Cote, and he told me Haig is going to be a guy who lasts in this league for a very long time because he's very positionally sound. He doesn't do anything flashy, but he will play defense the way it's supposed to be played. He's a 2-3 kind of defenseman, and he's very strong and physical and heavy on the puck, and will take guys out of a play. And when you get to watch him a little bit tomorrow night, you'll see the way he plays. He's not doesn't get rattled, and you know what? They played Chicago last week. I was at the game again when they played the Blackhawks. Jonathan Toews was as frustrated as I've ever seen Jonathan Toews in a game playing against Robert Haig, and that's just because he was on him the entire time, and just really just a smart player. And he's young himself, and he's 21, 22 years old. He's another guy who has some longevity ahead of him. Never going to put up big numbers. But he's the kind of guy who's just going to be very reliable, be able to give you 20 minutes a night, and you're never going to hear a peep from him, and he's going to do things the way you need him to be done. So I think Haig is a guy that the Flyers are going to count on in the future for a while as well.
Anthony, we'll let you go on this last question. For the last two games, Jets fans and ourselves have had the great displeasure of watching the Jets play the Arizona Coyotes. And the Flyers were the first of two victims that the Coyotes have managed to get victories on this season. What happened that the Coyotes were able to defeat the Flyers back in October?
It was an ugly game. I think the Flyers, they come in off of playing a couple good games before that, and I think they took the Coyotes lightly, and the Coyotes came in and just jumped on them real quick, and the Flyers got behind early and fast in that game. They were down 3-0 before they even could blink an eye. And then they stormed back, and the Flyers came back and they tied it just before overtime. They scored two goals in the final minute, actually, and it was 4-4. And then they gave up a goal in the overtime, and that's how they lost. Ended up losing that game 5-4. That's one of the weaker games of the season for the Flyers. But they do that. They'll play to the level of their opponent. You listen there and say, well, geez, how do you lose to Arizona? But then you look and they went into St. Louis and shut out the Blues. You know, they beat San Jose in San Jose. They blew out Washington 8-2. Not that Washington's off to a great start, but, you know, these are the kinds of things. They will play to the level of their opponent. Minnesota's a last-place team, and they just got shut out in back-to-back games by the Wild. So, well, you know, what does that tell you? The Flyers always tend to do that. It just seems like to be a thing that follows them from season to season to season. So as well as the Jets are playing right now, I expect the Flyers to play a pretty good game against them tomorrow night. I'm not in the prediction business because you can never – I think there are 50-50 every night, mm-hmm. but they're going to play to the level of the opponent.
Well, we will see. Hopefully it'll make for a more entertaining game than what we've seen for the last couple. The Jets and the Flyers tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, it's always good to speak with you, buddy.
Hey, guys, anytime. Talk to you soon.
Do it again real soon. Thanks again, Anthony.
Cheers, Anthony.
When we come back, we discuss the 2018 potential class of Hall of Fame inductees. Who should get in? Who should be on the outside looking in? That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Next year, well, how about Marty Brodeur? The NHL's winningest goalie is a slam dunk to get in his first year eligibility. Also in their first year, another Quebec native named Marty. 2004 Hart Trophy winner Marty St. Louis. Daniel Alfredson didn't make it in this year, in his first year of eligibility. Could next year be his shot? Other notables still waiting for the call: Jeremy Roenick, Theo Fleury, and Alexander McGillney as well.
TSN's Gino Retta going through some of the candidates to be elected to the Hall of Fame in the 2018 class, the 2017 class, inducted earlier this week. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, when the game is on, Bernstein's Deli is your place to be. They have great food and drink specials. They have the big screen TVs. They have full sound. It's hashtag hockey. Hockey night at Bernstein's. Full details at bernsteinsdeli.com. So you think Marty Brodeur is going to get a call into the Hall of Fame next year? You think he might sneak his way in there?
Yeah, I think he's going to sneak in,
it's
guys.
Tough.
You know, he has the most wins all time, the most shutouts all time.
Most
three
times,
Stanley
as he's
Cups.
Mentioned him on the air all time.
Yeah. He's gonna get in for sure.
So who's going to join him? I mean, you heard Gino Retta there. He mentioned Daniel Alfredson. He mentioned Marty St. Louis. There's other players. As you mentioned
Let me
earlier.
Go off here.
Please.
I feel like I'm Don
Ladies
Cherry.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Ezra Ginsberg
Wait,
show.
No, I feel like Phoenix I'm Cherry. This is Grapes and Ron McLean right now. But listen,
well,
I
hopefully you don't say anything about those pinko commies or anything.
Listen, Drew, I think Marty St. Louis should be a Hall of Famer. I think that Daniel Alfredson should be a Hall of Famer. We already talked about Marty Brodeur, but I've been saying this for how many years now? Theron Fleury, in my opinion, should go in as a player and a builder. We know what he's done with all of his motivational speaking and what he went through with Graham James and all that. As far as I'm concerned, he should be a slam dunk Hall of Famer. It's just a matter of time, and we know Marty's going to go in. There's a good chance that both Martys go in. But as far as I'm concerned, when you look at what Theron Fleury, Sean, did for small players in an era where small players really didn't make it at that time, and, you know, he's got the Stanley Cup, he's got the Olympic gold, he's got all of that success at the international level, I think Theron Fleury should be in the Hall of Fame.
Sean, your thoughts on Ezzie's comments and advocacy for Theron Fleury?
Yeah, I think it's all great points, and just what Theo Fleury had to battle, and yeah, being an undersized player, kind of paving the way for that type of small skill forward, but still just tough as nails, and off the ice, just, you know, it's well documented the demons he battled with substance and everything else that he had to encounter. And now in his post-hockey life, you know, being the motivational speaker and trying to provide support for those in need, I couldn't agree more, Ezzy.
And when you talk about Theron Fleury, I think, you know, maybe what goes against him is maybe the games played, but for me, you know, he played well over 1,000 games, and he was a point per game player.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he ended up finishing his career overseas, of course, in you know, the Irish League, I believe.
Yeah, but let's not talk about it. I mean, he wasn't of right mind, I would suspect, when he was overseas there. He was trying to conquer the demons that it seems as though he's conquered, thankfully. So, I mean, the less said about the time overseas, the better. But you know, I think with Theron Fleury has going for him, besides everything you just mentioned, Ezzy, is that he does get to that point per game threshold. That, to me, is a significant threshold. That's, I think, I don't think it's unreasonable that that be sort of the minimum standard to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame, is that you had to average at least a point a game. Marty St. Louis is a little bit under that. Now, Marty St. Louis had a great career, and for a guy who, you know, again, another small guy who, you know, a self-made player,
undrafted,
so to speak, undrafted. Nobody believed in him. He had a great, great career. He doesn't get to that point per game threshold. He's under that, 1,033 points in 1,134 games.
Yeah, but what are
played.
We talking, right? 0.85 or 0.9?
But I think it's got to matter at some point in time. There has to be a threshold, and my personal threshold
is a point per game.
Is a point per game.
Really?
I think I've said this for.
He's got a Hart Trophy. He's got a Stanley Cup.
Absolutely, and I've said this for years. I think the Hockey Hall of Fame is watered down a little bit. I think some of these players are Hall of very good players, but if the Hockey Hall of Fame should be about excellence, I think there's too many people in the Hockey Hall of Fame that are just sort of very good, not quite excellent. Theron Fleury, at the point per game, he makes it. 1,088 points, 1,084 games played.
Yeah, but aren't we splitting hairs here?
to some extent, but don't you want your Hall of Fame to have high standards, the highest standards possible? To me, that's just my opinion on the matter, is that it's a little more watered down than it should be. Ultimately, I don't really care. I'm not going to, you know, these people who rally against guys for making it in and make it their life's mantra to make sure that this guy doesn't get in, it doesn't really matter to me. But Theron Fleury at least reaches that minimum threshold that I'm looking for in somebody to be a Hockey Hall of Famer.
By the way, just looking at the stats, Marty St. Louis had 8 seasons.
I know.
Over a point per game.
Yeah, I know. But I mean,
he's getting in.
I think he does.
Maybe not first year eligibility, but he'll be in.
And Alfredson should be in as well, Drew. I mean, I don't care that he didn't win a Stanley Cup.
I'll tell you what. Let's hold it right there. Josh Cooper is going to join us on the other side. Let's ask Josh about his thoughts on all this, because Josh certainly comes with strong opinions about this and the Bachelor Winter Games, whatever the hell that actually is. But that we'll talk about that next with Josh Cooper. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Los Angeles, where we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Josh Cooper. Josh, when we first spoke with you, you were a new father. Now it's been a few months. How is the parenting thing going?
Well, it's going well. The only thing is, you guys told me it was the hit tonight was going to be 9 Eastern. So we had to switch around parenting duties once I realized it was 9 Pacific.
Why would we ever we're in the Central Time Zone. Why would we ever say 9 Eastern?
It said 9 ET. I'm looking at the text right now.
By the way, that's my fault because I booked you this week. So
it's totally cool. Don't worry about that. You're just going to have to explain it to my wife when, you know, she gets very angry and yells at you guys at some point if the kid starts melting down during this radio hit.
Yeah, that's. Don't worry, we're used to that. That happens all the time. That won't be any problem at all. We'll make it as quick as possible.
But in fairness to you guys, I did say I'm doing this no matter what because I love them.
Oh, well, we feel the same way about you there, Josh. You and basically, we're the only radio program that will give you a platform to talk about the Bachelor Olympics. That's basically what it boils down to, right?
Well, there's that, and I was listening to the advertisement you guys had earlier where you said if you go into that place, then just tell them that the Illegal Curve sent you. Everywhere I go, I tell them that in any store.
And how do people react to that in Los Angeles?
The Illegal Curve sent me.
Yeah, that might not work so well in Los Angeles, I'm just saying. Unless you're in like the San Fernando Valley and you're on a porn shoot, then if you walk in and say the Illegal Curve sent you, then they might give you a new job or something.
Oh, you guys are too much.
Josh, we were talking in the previous segment, we were talking about the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I was of the opinion that the Hockey Hall of Fame is a little watered down, in my opinion. That there's some players in there that belong probably more to the Hall of Very Good as opposed to the Hall of Fame, and that my personal benchmark is, for at least forwards, it should be a point per game player. That's, you know, in baseball, you know, 3,000 hits, or, you know, there's always those numbers that are sort of the magical numbers that get you into the Hall of Fame. To me, it should be a point per game. What are your thoughts on the Hockey Hall of Fame? Do you think I'm way out to lunch on the idea that it is sort of just the Hall of Very Good right now?
Oh, God, no. I couldn't agree with you less. Everyone who got elected into the Hockey Hall of Fame was at some point, at least, you know, when I guess selected, I don't think they really have an election. Though, I mean, it's a closed door thing, so we really have no idea how they do it. But I mean, those were all guys who any night I watched any of them play between Solani, Andrechuk, Recchi, or Paul Kariya, they did something that guys on the ice couldn't do. I mean, maybe you're referring more to Andrechuk in the sense that he's a guy who definitely belongs more in the compiler category, so to speak. But, I mean, he was an excellent hockey player for a number of years. put up some tremendous numbers. And, I mean, over 600 goals in 1,600 games, I mean, I think that certainly counts for something. Was he dominant? No, but, I mean, he definitely was a guy you certainly had the game plan for and someone who was an excellent, excellent hockey player for a number of years. And Paul Kariya, to me, I mean, if I want to go on just sheer talent amongst all the guys who are entering the Hall this year, he, to me, had to be number one. And to me, he was pretty much the best player in hockey until Gary Suter cross-checked him in the head all those years ago and kind of started that whole downfall with the concussions and everything else. I mean, I just remember how good he was before that. And, I mean, even after that, he was still an amazing hockey player, but just was never totally the same. But, I mean, he's fantastic. Mark Recchi, tremendous player, won Stanley Cups, scored a lot of points. And Timu Solani, you know, a guy who, as you guys know, in Winnipeg, is just beloved all over hockey. So I think that it's a very worthy class this year. I think that you can always have debates on certain guys and how it works out. And look, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't really know how this stuff gets voted because it's so unbelievably secret. It's not like Major League Baseball where baseball writers have to divulge their ballots. But overall, I think that there's a lot of incredible hockey players in there. And even the quote-unquote really, really good hockey players, I still think are guys who were top 10 players in their era.
Well, Josh, getting away from the Hall of Fame for a second here, there was a trade yesterday that took place during the Jets game, actually. Why did the LA Kings trade for Juuse Jokinen? Because as far as I'm concerned, Mike Camilleri is a much better player, and he's having a much better season.
Well, I think it honestly just has to do with the defensive situation overall. I just think they probably needed a little bit more sandpaper, a guy who he was a bit more of an all-around player than a guy like Camilleri, who was more of a one-trick sort of offensive type guy. And, I mean, I wrote about Camilleri shortly before the trade, actually, like the day before. You know, he's a guy who he definitely is a really good hockey player and certainly has a lot to give, but he was mostly playing on the power play in Los Angeles. And I think that from a Kings perspective, they probably wanted a guy who could just do more than just play on the power play. And that's not to say that, you know, Camilleri couldn't do more. It's just the way the role sort of set up here. I mean, he has a tremendous shot still. He can get in those open areas. I know that Edmonton is pretty good at creating offense with guys who can sneak into those spots in the power play. I look at Mark Letestu as someone who has really carved a role there in Edmonton with that. But I think they just needed a guy, honestly, who could play more of a two-way game. They think that, from what I could gather, it seemed like they believe their offense was set. Their offense has played really well. And Juuse Jokinen's a guy who can certainly chip in offensively, but also is a very, very good defensive player, too, and a very solid 200-foot player. And I think that's more what the Kings were looking for.
Josh, Dustin Brown is interesting this year. Seems to be rebounding quite well. As you know, last year just 36 points in 80 games. This year he's got 18 points in 18 games. What have you seen different from him this year that's allowed him to be successful so early on?
I think they're just accentuating his strengths more. I mean, he's very much a straight-ahead player. He's got good hands. He always gets the puck towards the net. And he just, for whatever reason, the last few years, I don't think he was put in the spot where he was able to do that as consistently. And this year, he's playing a first-line role. He's been basically a battering ram for this team again and been able to chip in offensively, again, by going to the net, going to those hard areas and generating offense. And I think in today's game, if you're able to get the puck towards the net, you're going to score. And on top of that, I mean, he really, to me at least, looks quicker this year than he has in years past. And I think that's just the fact that, not that he is quicker, but he's just able to play a bigger role and play a role that accentuates his strengths more. And I think that's a credit to John Stevens and the coaching staff in Los Angeles and what they've been able to do. And I remember earlier in the year, someone asked John Stevens about Dustin Brown. And he said, you know, even towards the end of last year, he was a guy who we thought his game was trending upwards. And I think they pegged him in on the first line of the offseason. And people looked at that like, okay, you know, you're going to put this guy on the first line. He hasn't scored more than 14 goals, I think, in the last 4 years or something like that per season. And he's just been dynamic there. And he and Anze Kopitar look excellent. I mean, the chemistry between those two has been phenomenal. And I think that also the other thing, too, is Kopitar's game and the way he's able to play has helped Brown. And I think that, you know, I was talking to Dustin Brown earlier, just about Kopitar and what Kopitar brings. And he said, you know, basically, if you're able to give Kopitar the puck, move to the open areas, he'll hold on to it long enough to enable you to get open and make a play. And I think that's what you're seeing right now. And again, I think it's part of it is just the fact that he knows how to play with Kopitar, and the two have always had good chemistry, and now they're back together again and really showing it.
Josh Cooper, our guest on NHL This Week. And Josh, right now we're watching the Ducks and the Bruins here in studio, and the Ducks taking it to the Bruins by a 4-1 margin, which would, you know, be impressive pretty much any time. But right now, given the litany of injuries that they are facing, and it looks like Corey Perry actually just left the game with a knee injury as well.
Oh, geez, I'm not watching, really?
Yeah, he just scored and left the ice almost simultaneous as he gets taken out. Looks like I can't see who the Bruins player is who takes him out by the knees accidentally, mind
Marchand.
You. But what?
Was it Marchand? I'm not watching. I'm just assuming.
No, yeah, it wasn't Marchand. I'm trying to see it. I'm watching a GIF of it, and I can't really see who it is at the moment.
And I say that as a guy who truly adores Brad Marchand's game. Oh, they say Perry is back on the bench. I'm seeing this on Twitter right now.
Okay.
I say this to someone who truly adores Brad Marchand's game just because during the World Cup last year, he enabled me to get home a couple days early by scoring that game-winning goal against Team Europe. So
it was very considerate of him, no doubt. But, yeah. Josh, can the Anaheim Ducks sort of survive the litany of injuries that they've been faced with so far this year? Kessler, Getzlaff, Fowler, Eves, Miller. I mean, it's a who's who of their lineup out of the lineup.
Well, if you're talking about can they survive and win a Stanley Cup without those guys, I mean, the answer is no. There's no way that's going to happen, but I mean, I was talking to someone about this after we heard about the Getzlaff injury, and we just basically were like, you know, as long as they stay in the playoff race, they get Getzlaff back, that's all they really need because, like, he's just – and really, at the end of the day, I mean, the Ducks always seem to turn on the second half of the season. And one of the things that is most impressive about that organization – and I remember, I forgot, it was sort of an off-the-record conversation, or maybe it was an anonymous conversation with the coach last year – or someone in hockey just about the Ducks. I remember I was a part of it, and they've just brought up the fact that that team has such an incredible amount of depth in their farm system, and they've built it up through all these years, and because of all this depth, they're able to withstand these injuries. And you just look at the amount of players who have been able to come up from San Diego and the AHL and have been able to contribute. And not just that, I mean, remember, the Ducks basically were – parted with their, I guess, the guy who a lot of us thought was their top defensive prospect, is Shea Theodore, and they just continue to churn out more defensemen. I mean, it's unbelievable just the amount of depth that these guys have in their organization. So, I mean, can they go all the way without Ryan Getzlaff, Ryan Kessler, and Cam Fowler, and Patrick Eves? I mean, the answer to that is no, but can they certainly stay afloat and keep things steady until those guys come back? Absolutely. I certainly think that they'll be able to do that.
Josh, we've got one final question for you here. And by the way, I really apologize for saying that this interview was going to happen 3 hours ago. I wanted to ask you about an article that you wrote for LosAngelesKings.com about Pierre Turgeon. They kind of created a new role for him, that offensive coordinator role. Can you just talk about the type of impact that he's had on this LA Kings team?
So the biggest thing that I noticed right off the bat, and I don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but he certainly, from what I can see, makes practices so exciting and exhilarating because he has an absolutely incredible amount of joy every time he sets on the ice in practice. And I think that that just goes down to the players. I think that the players feed off that. I think they are able to listen to him because of that. And he also shows them different ways to hold on to the puck, protect the puck, find the open guy up the seam. And because that's the stuff that he was just really good at. And I think that, you know, a lot of we've seen throughout the years. I mean, look, I mean, like Wayne Gretzky was the coach of the Coyotes. That didn't really work out very well. Just great players in the past who just, and I guess that Gretzky is sort of the standard bearer for that, so to speak, in terms of great players not being able to coach very well or take other roles very well. But I think the one thing that I've noticed with Pierre Turgeon is that players listen to him. And what he's teaching them actually works. And that's sort of what I've been able to at least gather from the times I've seen the Kings practice, talking to guys on the Kings. I mean, it just seems like that they're able to buy in just because he seems to love what he does so much. And I think that they listen to him, and what he's saying is stuff that is certainly helping them.
Josh Cooper is a very good friend of this program. You can read that article he just wrote at LAKings.com. Josh, did you catch the Vandy game on Saturday?
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you all later. look, I mean, you know, it hasn't been a very good football season. And you know what? They kind of did it to themselves when they were 3-0 and they started saying, we want Bama, we want Bama. And then Alabama just completely ruined them for the rest of the year. I mean, it was absolutely immaculate. But, college football is just, it's certainly a very fat. Obviously in Canada, I don't know how much you all watch it, but to me personally, it certainly is the football that I enjoy watching the most. The passion, just everything that goes on, and the fact that Nick Saban is clearly the most ridiculous coach anyone will ever find in any sport makes it that much better.
Yeah, I can be smug today because Georgia and Kentucky don't kick off until Saturday afternoon. Josh, always appreciate your time, buddy. Please say hello to your wife and, again, extend her our apologies for the time screw-up.
The baby did not cry, from what I could gather, so you guys are off the hook.
Attaboy, Josh.
Josh, just blame me. That's what Drew always does.
I always do. It's exactly what I do all the time.
I will never turn down a hit with you guys, and you know that.
We'll do it again soon, buddy. Thanks, Josh.
Take care.
Josh Cooper joins us on the program. What are we doing when we come back? Somebody have a show plan here? Latest edition of Insider Trading. We'll talk about what the NHL insiders are up to. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The TSN Hockey Insiders got together for another edition of Insider Trading. The trade market's heating up. Here's what the insiders were talking about.
They are the insiders, Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun, and Darren Dreger. Guys, in the world of business, if you like to play the stock market, it's all about supply and demand. In a very real way, the trade market's very similar to that, Bob. And right now, it looks like demand is exceeding supply.
I think that's an accurate assessment, Gino. And I think we also need to point out that trade talk has really picked up in the last week or 10 days, especially after the big Matt Duchene trade. And with NHL general managers meeting later this week in Montreal, the talk has really picked up. Now, these are teams that are in the market for forwards. Now, some of them, I mean, Anaheim, Montreal, the Rangers, they've been looking for a center since the season began. That's not new. The Florida Panthers, looking for a scoring winger, they've really stepped up their efforts lately. But you're absolutely right, Gino. All those teams are looking for forwards. I'm not sure there are that many great fits for teams that are looking to divest themselves. So right now there's a lot of talk, but whether or not we see action remains to be seen.
Bob, you had the Tampa Bay Lightning on that board. A lot of folks at home might be saying, what? The highest scoring team in the league and the best record. But yeah, that is a need for the Tampa Bay Lightning, would be a top nine winger in particular to play with, I think, Tyler Johnson, Alex Killorn on that third line. Now, I think at first Tampa wants to see if someone within the organization can step up. We know they're a deep organization and fill that role over the coming weeks and months. But if that doesn't play out, certainly I think Steve Yzerman will have no problem trying to be aggressive and looking at the trade market to go out and get that winger before the trade deadline.
I think we need to keep an eye on the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. You know, Jim Rutherford is a patient general manager. Normally, general managers wait until the 2025 game mark. But I think that what Rutherford and the Penguins are going to do because of their tough schedule is maybe wait till around the 30 or the 35 game mark. Now, they do have a bit of a situation developing in goal. They're very confident in Matt Murray, and they've got Tristan Jarry, who they have high hopes for, and they know that he is a competent backup. But maybe they need a bit more insurance. I wouldn't be surprised if the Penguins add a veteran goaltender who can slide into the American Hockey League in that insurance capacity.
Bob, looking ahead to some of the prospects, the under-17 just wrapped up in Northern BC, and the scouts right now are really singing the praises about at least one young American?
Yeah, that would be Jack Hughes. He's 16 years old, and he staked a very early, and we admit it's very early, potential claim to number one overall in the 2019 National Hockey League. entry draft. 5'10-ish, 165 pounds. He was absolutely dynamic at the under 17. In fact, many of the NHL scouts have attended this tournament for a long time said it was a virtuoso, dominant performance like they've never seen before. Of course, the Hughes family is already bracing for the 2018 NHL draft. Quinn Hughes is a defenseman at the University of Michigan, and he's a potential top five pick. He's got elite speed, elite skill. They're American kids. The son of Jimmy Hughes, who used to work for the Toronto Maple Leaf organization, but Jack Hughes was also a graduate of the Toronto Marlboros minor midget system.
We mentioned the general manager is going to get together later on this week on Friday in Montreal. Pierre, you're going to be there. What can they look forward to discussions at that point?
Well, certainly they'll re-examine the numbers and the impact of the crackdown on slashing. I think a lot of managers are actually happy with it overall this year. But the coach's challenge, as always, is going to be re-examined. There have been a number of controversial situations this year. And one of the things that NHL Hockey Operations has done, they've sent out a number of video examples already to GM so they can study them and be ready to comment on them when they meet Friday in Montreal.
Well, the offside review is definitely going to be talked about. There's no question about that. When you look at the bigger picture, it's a good thing that there are fewer offside challenges this year. And a lot of people believe it's because if you get that challenge wrong, there is that two-minute minor penalty. Not all NHL coaches love the idea of this penalty. Here's an example, early November, Pittsburgh playing Calgary. Now, upon review, it looks like the Penguins are offside before Hornquist scores what turned out to be the tying goal. But if Glenn Gullitson isn't 100% sure, if his video people aren't 100% sure, and they call that review and they fail, well, it could be a two-goal swing. So it'll get some discussion point on Friday, but obviously the league doesn't like to do anything by way of change in season.
They are our insiders, Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun, and Darren Dreger. It is Insider Trading.
The interesting takeaway from insider trading, if I do say so myself, are that the rich are trying to get richer. Don't the Tampa Bay Lightning score enough? Do they really need to add another top nine forward to their team? I mean, they're clearly the best team in hockey right now. I don't know that anybody would argue with that point, or if you want to argue that point, by all means, you know, bring it on. They're in the market for another forward. You know, it's just clear the Tampa Bay sees this as their season, mm-hmm. and they're going to do everything in their power, much like Nashville did by acquiring Kyle Turris to try and, you know, load up for a long, lengthy Stanley Cup playoff run.
Yeah, guys, and I don't really see the Tampa Bay Lightning making a substantial move anytime soon because they just keep winning. As you mentioned, Drew, and they keep scoring goals. But right now they've got Tyler Johnson and Chris Kunitz on their third line mm-hmm. and with JT Brown. And when you're talking about, you know, the production they're getting from Stamkos, from Kucherov, from Namestnikov, and Braden Point and Palat and Gord on that second line, I don't see the rush, the need to really acquire that forward. Now, if anything, I'm looking at this Lightning lineup, and maybe you could add a face-off specialist or maybe some toughness, some grit on those bottom two lines. But right now, I really don't see the need. They've already really clinched a playoff spot, and I'm not even joking. I mean, they've won so many games so far. What are they at? 30, 31 points already. So when you're talking about, you know, the Lightning and where they're at and how well they're playing, what's the rush to really go out and acquire forward? You do that in February prior to the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now, as mm-hmm. I mentioned, Tyler Johnson and Chris Kunitz on your third line, that's pretty damn good.
Lightning 14-2-2 in their 18 games that they've played. So they've lost as many games as the Arizona Coyotes have won this season. And Sean, the one that jumped out to me as well is the Pittsburgh Penguins are seeking a goaltender who can sort of play in the AHL immediately without going through waivers and without having, you know, to expose that player to waivers. Boy, oh boy, doesn't that sound like Michael Hutchinson of the Manitoba Moose, who got the win for the Moose tonight by virtue of the fact he's in the AHL right now. He doesn't have to clear waivers, or he doesn't have to go up through the NHL to be sent to an AHL, to an NHL team's affiliate in the AHL. So in Pittsburgh's case, they could if they were to acquire him, they could immediately send him to Wilkes-Barre mm-hmm. without having to risk losing him in waivers.
I believe Tristan Jarry would have to be subjected to waivers if he...
No, I don't believe that would be necessary because he's still, I believe, on an entry-level contract. But there's no re-entry waivers
right.
anymore. So Hutchinson can go straight to the mm-hmm. NHL if they wanted him to. But they could also keep him in the AHL.
Speaking of backup goalies, Sean, why the heck did the Montreal Canadiens acquire Antti Niemi?
Well, they needed a goalie who can't make any saves.
Well, I realize Al Montoya's injured right now. But what did they see out of Niemi so far this year that would make you think he would help you at all.
Well, he was good in Chicago when Mark Bergevin was the assistant general manager there about 10 years ago.
Key phrase, 10 years ago.
Honestly, there's no reason to acquire Anthony Niemi at this point. And I know it was just a waiver acquisition, but...
He's not an NHL goalie anymore.
Clearly not. I mean, he's on to his third team this season already, and it's not like he's going to catch lightning in a bottle and turn into another NHL goalie.
You know, Drew, speaking of Hutchinson, he had 40-plus saves tonight in the Moose victory, so... I don't know if the Jets want him going anywhere.
Well, the Jets are still, they haven't pulled the trigger, and there's certainly been, by the sounds of it, been interest in him. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Zachary Devine. He covers the San Jose Sharks for theathletic.com in the Bay Area. Also does some work for Dauber Prospects. We'll talk to him about the Sharks. Up next, you're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio on this Wednesday night. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Zachary Devine. Zach covers the San Jose Sharks and the San Jose Barracuda and all things Bay Area sports for theathletic.com. Zachary, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Zachary, obviously brought you on to talk about the Sharks. Off to a pretty solid start this season, you know, 10-6 thus far. You know, anytime you've won, you know, about two-thirds of your games, I'd say you're doing pretty well. Is this team sort of flying underneath the radar? They're only 2 years removed from the Stanley Cup finals appearance. They obviously went out in the playoffs earlier last season. Are they sort of just flying under the radar in the Pacific Division so far this season?
Yeah, I think so. You know, they got off to a slow start with two stinker games against the Flyers and the Kings. And here in Northern California, anytime you drop a real bad loss to the Kings, just the alarms go off everywhere and it's doomsday. But, you know, they've really righted the ship, and they're a low-scoring team. You know, they're only 29th in the league in goals, but they've got two really good goaltenders, obviously, and Martin Jones, who everyone's heard of, and slightly less heralded Aaron Dell, who's stepped in and been a very solid backup for them. So it's a differently constructed team than what we saw take a run at the Stanley Cup, but still a team that I think can contend in the playoffs.
Now, Zachary, how concerned, as you mentioned, the Sharks are playing better hockey as of late, but how concerned is the team that they're getting so little goals from Brent Burns and Joe Pavelski right now?
You know, I think if you know, Pavelski and Burns, that's certainly a concern. And the diminishing ice time for Joe Thornton, you know, with his surgically repaired knee during locker cleanout, he let everyone know that pretty much he was playing on one ligament in that knee and had off-season surgery, and he didn't miss, you know, a single regular season game. That's got to be concerning. You know, 38 years old, he's just not going to... He's not going to heal like he did 10, 15 years ago. And so you're seeing maybe the effects of him rushing back, even though he's third on the team in scoring. Burns, I think, is really the concern, though. So much of the offense funneled through him last year en route to that Norris Trophy. But teams are figuring out that you got to get on him quick. You got to forecheck, clog those lanes, take away his lateral movement. And there's not a lot he can do back there. And so he's got to adjust his game now and get back to the Burns that so much of the Sharks' offense and really the entire first-unit power play runs through.
Zachary, I know you cover the Sharks, but based out of California, and it just must have been a really fun week to be a part of California hockey with, you know, just the nostalgia involved with Paul Kariya and Teemu Selänne being inducted into the Hall of Fame.
You know, it really is, and, you know, I was listening to some of your earlier discussions, and it is such a shame. Paul Kariya's, you know, stellar career. He's one of the best players on earth, you know, and having that Gary Suter cross-check that really just completely changed his trajectory in his career. is a shame. You know, Timo Solani, depending on if you're NorCal or SoCal, has a slightly different history here in the state. But, you know, obviously one of, you know, really the great players of his generation.
Zachary Devine is our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the San Jose Sharks with Zachary. You can find his work on the BayArea.com site of TheAthletic.com. Zachary, the Sharks, 36 goals against in their 16 games played. That's tops in the NHL so far. You know, we know Pete DeBoer is a tremendous head coach and probably doesn't get the credit that he deserves on a national basis, and that probably comes to some degree with playing in San Jose, and we know the West Coast, East Coast bias and that sort of thing. But, you know, is his emphasis on the defensive side of the game more severe this year than in past years? And severe is not the right word, but does he look at this roster and know that defense has to be the catalyst for them winning more than the offense?
I think until you get that top line and with Pavelski and Thornton going, I think that the whole team is going to have to really ratchet it down. They just don't have the team speed that you're seeing that's really becoming the staple of the new NHL. And their real bad loss to Tampa Bay, I think, exposed that, an overall lack of team speed. So this is a team that is constructed a little bit in the old school way. You know, they're going to lean really heavily on Martin Jones. I think DeBoer now has confidence in Aaron Dell to keep Jones fresh for what they hope to be a long, you know, spring run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But it is looking at this roster. They've got players like Joel Ward and, you know, just all over the place with, Melker Carlson, you know, guys that aren't the fleetest of foot, but they're good hockey players. And so they're going to have to play to their strength. And a lot of that is going, I think, to be a more defensive style hockey than what we're used to.
Zachary, you just mentioned Joel Ward, and your colleague Kevin Kurse recently wrote about the Sharks' fourth line and how successful it's been. Joel Ward, Timo Meier, and Barclay Goodrow. By the way, you don't expect to see Timo Meier and Joel Ward on the fourth line, but why has that line been so successful in your mind?
You know, to me, and I have a slightly different slant on this, is I've really thought that Barclay Goodrow has taken a huge step forward this year. I watched him quite a bit with the Barracuda last season. In the first two-thirds of the year, he really had a bad case of NHL-itis. He moved into that fourth-line center role as Pete DeBoer put on the we call it the DeBoer Line Blender 3000, and he really just took off. And he hasn't played center, you know, since he was a kid. And he's just been the player that I think the Sharks were hoping that he would be last year, and he's playing physical. He's all over the place. He's really helping drive the possession and the play of that line. Timo Meier, you know, I think it's fair to say the early season has been a bit of a disappointment, but he looks to be clicking with Goodrow. And Joel Ward, you know, he's definitely lost a step, but he's finally found a home after being in and out of the lineup. So the Sharks having a fourth line that they can just count on, I think, after the early season struggles with that bottom six and trying to figure out what was going on there, that has to be viewed as a positive.
Zachary, you mentioned Timo Meier, and I wanted to touch on a play that took place a couple days ago. He gets fined just over $2,400 for a butt end on the Vancouver Canucks. Who is it? The defenseman. Oh, it's killing me now.
One Del of the Zotto. Canucks defensemen.
Yeah, Delzato.
Michael Delzato.
Delzato. Fined $2,400. I'm just curious, from your perspective, does the punishment fit the crime there, or do you think the NHL needs to be a little more severe on butt ends to the face like that?
You know, I think it's Timo Meier doesn't have that reputation, and so I think he got the benefit of the doubt. I think that's one of those plays that could have gone either way. If he had gotten a game, I understand the NHL trying to clean up the game, watch out for those hits to the head. It would have sent a very clear message. So I wouldn't have been too upset if he had gotten a single game. A max fine, though, for a young player as a lesson learned, that makes sense, too. I really feel like that one was towing that line right down the middle where that could have broke either way. And I think his youth and lack of other plays like this might have saved him from having to sit a game. But I really understand both sides of that argument, and it's a coin flip for me.
Zachary, I wanted to ask you about Tim Heed. Prior to this year, he'd only played one NHL game. He's a former pick of the Anaheim Ducks. But entering this year, not many people knew about Tim Heed, but he's actually found a pretty nice role on the Sharks, hasn't he?
He really has. The Barracuda's top pairing from last year, Joachim Ryan and Tim Heed, have both just made this seamless transition to the NHL. Last March, I kind of tongue-in-cheek mentioned how much the Barracuda are going to miss them this year when they were in the NHL, but I didn't think that this transition would have been this seamless for the two of them. Heed just has an incredible shot, and we're just now starting to see it. We've only seen two or three big clappers from him, but he's got an absolute howitzer from the point, and he's a guy that you can run that power play through. He's smart. He takes smart chances as well. He'll gamble to keep the play alive, but he's got the speed and the recovery to get back on defense. He's not the biggest guy, but his angles are good. His edge work's good. You're not going to just push him over off the puck. He's going to get body position on you. You know, slightly older player, but certainly a capable find from Shin Larson over there in Europe that the Sharks just seem to find with the Donskoys and the Melker Carlsons and now Tim Heed. They just seem to have this really good pipeline coming from the SHL and Liga.
Zachary, we'll let you go on this final question. You also cover the San Jose Barracuda. The Moose and the Barracuda played last weekend, and they split two games in San Jose. You know, what should fans of the AHL or fans of the San Jose Sharks that are keeping an eye on the pipeline, who in the Barracuda lineup should they be keeping an eye on as a future contributor to that San Jose Sharks team at the NHL level?
Well, first of all, I have to congratulate you guys on Jack Roslovic. He was a force in both games, and that, to me, I tweeted that out, that he looked like a player that the Jets could use in the NHL. So he had, I thought, a really good showing for the Moose. For the Sharks, I think it really comes down to Danny O'Regan. He's a center now with the Barracuda. I see him more as a wing at the next level, but he's just one of those players, again, not big, about 5'10", pretty well built, but he just seems to have this knack for the puck following him all over the ice. It's the most peculiar thing to watch. But he just understands the game. He sees it. He uses his teammates well. He's not afraid of the dirty areas, but he's creative. I really think that that's a player that could get a cup of coffee and a real good look should injuries hurt. Probably down the line a little bit is Rudolph Balcers, the 40-goal scorer for the Kamloops Blazers. Had a great first year in North America last year. He's definitely settling in to that style. And then a dark horse, I think, is Adam Haluka, staying over there in the Dub, played for Spokane and then with Red Deer. He's really put on some muscle this year, took his fitness very seriously this summer when I spoke with him. It looks like a new player. He's always driven possession, but this year that's taken a step forward as well.
Zachary, just sticking with the San Jose Barracuda for a second, how has the American Hockey League been received in the San Jose Bay Area since its inception last year?
The attendance, I think, definitely isn't where the club was hoping for, especially with such a young, exciting team last year that went to the Western Conference Finals. It's got a bit of a cult following, but the attendance definitely is something that I think that the organization would like to see improve. However, I've also spoken to a lot of the front office, and it's good having, both Johan Hedberg and Evgeny Nabokov there to work with the goalies, to have Mike Ricci, and Brian Marchment there to work with the team, along with Roy Sommer. And you see Joe Will, who's the assistant general manager and heads of the Barracuda, right next to Doug Wilson, taking in a Barracuda game. There's a lot of positives for the organization to have everything right then and there to give these players all the developmental tools that they have, and especially with 10 rookies this year, over a dozen last year, keeping that youth kind of close and with the team and seeing what it takes to be a professional just across the hall at SAP Center, I just don't know if you could put a price on that, and I think that it's really paying off for the Sharks organization.
Zachary Devine covers the San Jose Sharks and the San Jose Barracuda for TheAthletic.com in the Bay Area. Zachary, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL This Week.
Thank you, you guys. You have a great night.
Likewise, Zachary. Take care. When we come back, one final segment, we'll look at the out-of-town scoreboard. We'll mention the Moose score, talk about one goaltender who's got three straight shutouts. 10 minutes to go. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Final segment this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by our friends of Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. At Rumors this weekend, starting tomorrow night, you know him, John Doerr, in town. Some shows already sold out. Tickets, very few tickets available, but get them right now at rumorscomedyclub.com, or you're going to miss out, and you don't want to miss out on seeing John Doerr at Rumors Comedy Club this weekend. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard on this Wednesday night. It was an entertaining contest at, Little Caesars Arena. I guess it's no longer Joe Louis Arena. Little Caesars Arena tonight. The Detroit Red Wings, 8-2 victors. The rare quadrupling of a team. They quadrupled the Calgary Flames 8-2, a game that also featured what counts as a line brawl in this day and age. It was sort of a bizarre scene as you were watching the game and you came back from commercial break and all of a sudden all hell had broken loose when the game was in commercial.
Yeah, it was almost not for believing. Luke Witkowski and Brett Kulak were fighting, and then Witkowski was walking off to go into the dressing room because, as you know, when you get into a fight with less than 10 minutes left in a period, you automatically go to the dressing room, and Matthew Tkachuk gave him a little love tap, which he got a spearing major for.
Yeah,
and then he came back onto the ice, and then all hell broke loose, and the goaltenders, because it was a commercial break, as you mentioned, were by the bench. Jimmy Howard started going at it with Mark Giordano, and then you saw Travis Hamonic and Anthony Mantha start to fight, and then what was kind of scary about the whole incident is the door to the bench was open, and Travis Hamonic actually ended up falling backwards into it. So it looks like Witkowski is probably going to get a suspension. It might not even be a 10-game suspension for coming back to the ice, because once you're headed to the dressing room, you can't come back onto the ice.
Yeah, it was a real bizarre scene late earlier tonight in Detroit. In Chicago, the Blackhawks defeat the Rangers. They double them up by a 6-3 margin. Artem Anisimov with the hat trick. And the last game tonight in Anaheim, the Ducks doubled up the Bruins by a 4-2 score. That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Quick programming note, next two Wednesdays feature Jets games, so we're off on the next two Wednesdays. The next edition of Midweek will be Wednesday, December the 6th, but of course Saturday morning, not 8 a.m., the Illegal Curve Hockey Show will be on this fine station. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, on our website, or subscribe to the show. Get it sent to your device each and every week.
Bedtime, Drew.
Big props to producer Chris, doing a great job. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday morning at 8 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.